offensive shot profile. Sort of, there's that tug of war between efficiency, efficient nights, and then longer stretches of inefficiency. There's just something feels off about the Wizards there.
It's like if you are, you have a turkey or you have a chicken or something like that, and you have the exterior, it looks amazing. You know, it comes out of the oven. It's like, wow, this is going to be a feast. And then once you start to kind of dive into it and get a little bit deeper, then you see the flaws. Hey, what's good, everybody? This is Aaron Washington coming back at you guys for the next installment of the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. This is 141. I'm really looking forward to having a discussion here with Dan Favell of Bleacher Report. He is an NBA writer for them, as well as a co-host for Hardwood Knox and a deputy editor for NBA Math. This dude is involved in a lot of different things in the NBA sphere. He's got his hand in a lot of different pods, so he definitely knows this stuff, and I'm glad to have him on this afternoon. We're going to be discussing a few players that are really going pretty much nuclear right now in terms of their individual play and what that means for their respective teams. So Curry, Westbrook, and Zion Williamson are having incredible seasons so far, and all of their teams are right on the cusp of the play-in tournament. So I wanted to take a look here with Dan to see how their teams are stacking up here and maybe their odds of making the play-in and whether or not they'll have a good shot of making the playoffs, the formal playoffs. So, Dan, thank you so much for offering your time this afternoon. Glad to have you on and excited to talk hoops with somebody that follows the game so closely and writes for a reputable outlet such as Bleacher Report.
Oh, well, thank you for the kind words, number one, and thank you for having me. I'm always down to talk some hoops.
Same here. The networking aspect as well for me, I just love the opportunity to get to interact with guys like you. So really looking forward to it. So, Dan, why did you say we get into these three players that are making some waves here in the NBA world as of today? The first of which is going to be Steph Curry. I mean, what more do you need to really say about this guy that's just going absolutely out of his mind this season for the Golden State Warriors, who are down Klay Thompson. You know, their former core is pretty much out. Draymond Green is not the same player he was before. And really, it's been Curry picking up the slack for this team that has a lot of holes. It's a weird complement of young players as well as some of the holdovers from a previous era. And it's really just wild to think that his numbers are on par with that MVP season he had, two of his MVP seasons, and that incredible 15-16 campaign that he had that really just kind of shook our minds. So as of today, he's averaging 30 points a game, 5 boards, 5.9 assists, and his shooting splits are incredible too. I mean, 48% from the field, 42 from three, and 92 from the line, and he's taking 12 threes a game. So this is not a small sample size. This isn't a guy that's taking 3 threes a game. You know, he's age 33 now, and he's still producing at this level, which is something we haven't quite seen much of in NBA history. So, Dan, from your perspective, what makes Steph Curry so special right now, what he's doing? And do you feel like this is going to be sustainable as the Golden State Warriors are within 15 games now of the end of the season, which involves a play-in spot potentially in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I think what makes him so special is just his ability to, you know, it is part of his range, but he's just able to leverage that into so many different things when he gets inside the arc. He's a pretty good finisher around the basket. He has that incredible floater too. So he's able to do a lot of damage to defenses that are already on tilt and defending against his three ball. And then you watch him play, just the types of looks he can hit off the dribble, and then the range, of course, where it's just he wakes up in the morning and he's immediately in range. The fact that he's like has more influence, I would say, over the offense than usual, just because they're not going to, there's still the Stephen Curry off ball stuff. Like they don't have the option of running him off the ball as much anymore. Like he has to take and shoulder this kind of volume. When you look at that supporting cast, their offense has been absolutely terrible when he's off the court this season. So he is very much their lifeline there. And it kind of snuck up that, oh, he all of a sudden leads the league in scoring now with his 31.1 points per game. He's averaging like 40 points since the start of April, I think it is. The splits there have been unbelievable, shooting better than 60% on his twos, which, you know, he's not just getting all these layups. Those are some tough, some of them circus finishes or the floaters I mentioned before. So to have that guy who can uplift an entire offense by himself, because there's just, they don't have much around him. There's not really another shot creator. Draymond Green, I guess, counts, but like when you don't have to defend against his shot or he's passing up, looks at the rim for guys in the corner or maybe not even in the corner, it feels very much this season like Stephen Curry's basically alone. Whether it's sustainable, I think it is. It's Stephen Curry. Like it's just, you have to assume it's sustainable. It's interesting though that he's doing this at the age of 33.
Yeah.
Probably the bigger picture question that matters more is, can he continue doing this beyond this season? And if he can, what can the Warriors do to wedge open their title window again? Because I don't know at this point if you put a healthy Klay Thompson with this team, if they are more than a fringe title contender. Just he's coming back from an ACL and an Achilles. Mm-hmm. Just what we've seen from Draymond on offense this year, maybe things get easier because you have Klay Thompson spacing the floor around you.
Sure.
Even with Klay, though, it feels like they're one shot creator short of being that special team. And if you're Golden State, you're obligated to go out and try and find that guy, even if you have to mortgage your future to do it on the trade market, because
right.
Curry is a top five player in the world, probably the best player in the world during this stretch right now.
I agree. And to go back to your point about him just kind of driving this offense solo, I went and looked at how many of his shots or what percentage of his shots are assisted, and only 48% of his shots are assisted. So that puts him at about the 26th percentile of the NBA, according to Cleaning the Glass. So that really shows you, it shows us that he is not a guy that's just, like you said, going off a ball, coming off of screens and getting looks that are clean. Like, he really has to create these for himself. And that kind of puts things in perspective when we're looking at his efficiency numbers, because there are not many other players on earth that can do what he's doing at the volume he's doing and maintain this kind of efficiency. And I mean, you've watched Steph Curry, you've watched how defenses approach him every game. As soon as he steps over half court, like I'll use the Sixers game as an example, they have guys in his eye. They have George Hill trying to slow him down, you know, Tyrese Maxey, Danny Green, guys just trying to force him off of the line and make him a driver. And then you just mentioned, you know, what he's shooting at the rim this season. I mean, he is an incredible finisher, and that's really just impressive considering his size. He's not the fastest guy. I'm sure he's lost a step since, you know, his age 27, 28 seasons when he was, you know, in the thick of the MVP race. But regardless of all of that, he finds ways to be effective. And what kind of brings us to the next era of Warriors basketball is like what you spoke on. And it comes down to that core, and it comes down to like guys like Wiseman. I'm not sure if he's going to develop in time for them to really have a shot at the title, because you look at the kind of player he is, and he's really impressive, and you see the bones of a great player, but it's not all the way there yet. So even next year, I'm not sure if he's going to be ready to compete at that level. Have you been more encouraged or less encouraged by his play as it pertains to his future, like for the Warriors? Because I see some people down on him. And I just say be patient, but I don't know if the Warriors can afford to be patient. And then that's kind of the dilemma they find themselves in right now.
Yeah, and really quickly, you brought up an interesting point when looking at Steph's unassisted baskets. Just more of his baskets are coming off assists this year than last year, which is almost criminal when you look at the supporting cast that's around him. And it's been up over the past few weeks, but it speaks to how the Warriors probably should have given him more control much sooner in the season. With Wiseman, I agree with you that there seems to be the bones of a really good player there, and I wasn't necessarily too high on him when he was coming out of the draft. So I've actually been, you know, there's the turnover issues, the handling the ball issues, but I've actually been impressed with his defensive mobility, and it looks like there could be a really good pick and roll finisher there on offense. And he does seem like he could eventually have 3-point range. Maybe he's only a pick and pop option. He's not going to create his own looks there, but that's totally fine if you're playing center. The issue you run into is just, you already mentioned it, they don't have the time to wait around. And
yeah.
I'm not saying they should move him. You just can't bank on him. And I don't even know, maybe the default should have been, well, they need to trade him over the offseason. But after he injures, I think he tore his meniscus is the injury that he's dealing with. Mm-hmm. What is his trade value now? You don't sell low on the number 2 pick in the draft that soon when it looks like he could be really good. A lot's right. going to hinge on that Minnesota pick, I think, that's top 3 protected. If it doesn't convey this year, it still has some appeal as an unprotected pick in 2022.
Sure.
But I think knowing what this draft is at the top with the top 5 or 6 or 7 picks, if you have 4 or 5 and can use that in a trade package, if you have Stephen Curry, I'm going to say again, you're obligated to do it. I don't think that you have the talent to straddle both timelines. And that now has to be the anchor of any star or fringe star package that you're going to offer, because I don't know that James Wiseman, coming off that injury and given what he did his rookie season, I don't know if he's going to be appealing enough to be the headliner of such a deal. He might be. He's still young, but it's going to take a team that really buys into his future.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's going to be a team out there that's going to give them the kind of player back in a deal like that that's really going to help the Warriors take the next step towards being a contender. And his injury is really unfortunate for them, because the Warriors are trying to make a push towards this play-in spot. And I'm sure that this organization, Curry, These veterans, and you know, everybody on that team wants to be a part of the plan in the playoffs. Just looking at how they finished last season as the worst team in the Western Conference and just a dismal record, they want to be back in the mix of the playoffs, even though it might only result in a first round appearance. And as of today, I mean, they're tied with the Spurs for that last play-in spot. So they're 29-30. The Spurs are 28-29, and it's really going to be kind of a battle for that last spot. They do have a cushion for 10th because the Pelicans, who we're going to get to in a moment here, are kind of not really helping themselves towards getting that last spot. But, you know, when you look at what the Warriors are up against for their final, few games or so for their closing schedule, you know, they have about 13 games left, and 9 of those are at home. And as far as the strength of schedule, based on what Positive Residual has on his website, they'll have the second easiest schedule remaining. So 9 out of 13 at home, they're going to be playing some easier opponents down the stretch. So it does give them a good bit of confidence and a cushion, just knowing that they can possibly get into at least 9 or 10 and get themselves to being, in the formal playoff period. But then that brings us to who they could be competing against. So, I mean, it could be Dallas, it could be Portland, it could be San Antonio, Memphis, because all of those teams are kind of like right there in the same mix as far as a few games away from each other. So if we're trying to extrapolate this towards a play-in spot, the playoffs, I'm confident that because they have this guy named Steph Curry in their midst and they only have to win a game or two to get into the playoffs, they have a great shot, because in any given matchup, I think they're going to have the best player on the floor. And as we know from past experience watching playoff games, if you have the best player in the series, you're automatically, I think, in most circumstances, favored to win that. So if they're going up against a Dallas or a Memphis or something like that, do you feel like this is a team that could really see themselves in the first round, even though if they're in that situation, they're probably just going to be cannon fodder for Utah or Phoenix in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine going through the whole season, getting a 1 or 2 seed in the West, and your reward is playing Curry in the first round? Would kind of blow. But I agree. I think both teams would beat them. I think I look at them and I do default to them. They're probably going to make the playoffs they're going to have to go through the play-in to do it too. Like they're just too far away from sixth at the moment. I guess you could be a little bit scared of having to play Luka in a potential play-in game, but if you give yourself an opportunity to play like 2 games and you want to get in that 7 or 8 spot so that you have multiple opportunities to get in, that's probably the key for them right now, because there's not going to be a guarantee beyond that. So I would pencil them in to make the playoffs as the playing team. And maybe that's the Spurs. I just don't see it right now. It's their defense was like kind of plucky for parts of the year, but it's been all over the place since. I'm not sure that they have enough good from scratch creation aside from DeMar DeRozan on offense. The Grizzlies, they're tough to get a feel for. Getting Jaren Jackson Jr. back will be huge for them. They've quietly had like a top 5 offense since the start of April. They could maybe be tough just because they're a lot deeper in replacement level players or better than the Warriors right now. I still think just having the higher end talent in that series with Steph would give you the advantage, but I don't think that game against Memphis would necessarily be just a breeze. So there is a level of risk to pencil them in. I don't know if they could do any damage once they get to the first round, as you already mentioned. Even though I view them as like, hey, they'll get there. I'm just, Utah and Phoenix, I don't think they're considered their traditional powerhouses just yet, but we can't undersell just how shallow the Warriors are on the offensive end this year.
That's the issue. I mean, they compete for sure. You look at their defense, they're not a pushover on defense, but when you can't really generate offense when one guy leaves the floor, that puts you in a vulnerable position. So it's definitely going to be tough sledding for them as they finish out the season. But I think in any case, us as fans are better off for this stretch that Curry's putting together. We get to marvel at this every night, and we get to really just see history. You know, we mentioned this earlier, but, not many players his age or older have done what he's done. It's really almost unparalleled. You have to look at guys like maybe LeBron or a Kareem or something like that in history to get this type of production. So regardless, I think we're in for a treat, and I can't wait to see how he generates more offense and just give this team hope as they approach the end of the season here. But as we're on the topic of point guards, I mean, there's been another guard in the opposite conference that approaches the game a little bit different as far as, let's say, efficiency or lack thereof. This guy, Russell Westbrook, is not really going to be favored in the advanced stats group. His percentages are a little bit iffy. I'm still trying to understand how his free throw percentage fell off a cliff after, you know, being around 80% for his career, and now he's down in the 60s. That's always going to be a weird development to me, but I call him the box score god. You know, we have point gods out there, we have other guys like that, but this is the box score god, because when you look at what he does every night, from points, rebounds, assists, 21 points, 11 rebounds, almost 11 assists per game, it's almost unimaginable. This is the fourth season of his career averaging a triple double. He has 27 this season alone, and he's only eight away from tying Oscar Robertson for number one all time in triple doubles. So this is a guy that just feasts off of just a bunch of looks per game. His usage is sky high. You know, the on-off numbers aren't great for him, as relates to him being on the court with his team offensively. But he and Beal have the Wizards in the play-in, amazingly, with the Raptors and the Bulls right behind them. So if we're going to look at Westbrook and how the Wizards have done so far this season, it's just been kind of like a roller coaster. There's been some times where it looked like they were dead, and now guys like Westbrook and Beal kind of give them hope. And that's where having top-end talent really helps them out. So as far as Westbrook's case, like, how are you feeling about his performance? I mean, this looks like something we've seen before in past seasons, but, you know, it's another conference, and it's going to come down to this new format in the play-in. So if they make it, I'm not sure how they perform, but in any case, you know, Westbrook's play has been something to watch. And he has been pretty incredible as he himself gets up there in age, at about age 32, as of this point in the season so far.
Yeah, it is still pretty amazing to watch him still champion the force of will stuff, because it's even during his hottest streaks this year, like, he hasn't been the most efficient player. It seems like ever since he had that 42-point game, I think that was in mid-March, that he's turned the corner. But you could just break down his efficiency splits however you want, and if you stretch it out longer than five games or so, he's still going to have like a sub-50 effective field goal percentage. He's still going to be shooting sub-40% from mid-range, only going to be shooting, you know, between like 37 or 40% in the paint. So there is that element of, and then you mentioned his free throw shooting already, there is that element of its variance, there's unpredictability, and there's just general inefficiency. But because he's such a force and defenses still react to him going downhill, he has that incredible value to an offense. And he's going to end up, you know, there are going to be shots for his teammates that wouldn't otherwise exist if someone else was handling the ball in that situation. I still sort of view, and this was even before the Denny Avdia injury, I still sort of view Washington as like this paper tiger in the East. And whoever wins the play-in, unless it's, you know, if you have Miami or Boston in 7 and 8, one of those two teams is probably going to be 7 and 8. Like, that they could put up a fight against the top seed or the top two seeds in the East, but you're not going to expect any of these teams to really beat Philly, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn, whoever ends up in you know, any of those top seeds. Just with Washington specifically, you look at their roster, and they do have some other intriguing players, but the supporting cast still feels like a few bodies short. And it's Garrison Matthews Jr. Yeah. Has had sort of an underrated season. I think Rui Hachimura has come along a good way. Beal, this hasn't been his most efficient season, but it's just a still immensely value offensive player when you look at his own from scratch shot creation. So the Wizards, that they're still sort of in this play-in hunt when it sort of looked like they were doomed to be something worse much earlier in the season. I do think that is a nod to the top end talent. Like you mentioned, having that goes a long way in general, but it works out for you a bunch in the Eastern Conference. That being said, as we record this right now, like, I might be inclined to put the Raptors in the 10 spot or in the play-in tournament before I would assume that Washington makes it. There just seems like I don't trust them. And that's not, you know, that's probably a little bit of an indictment on Russ. To his credit, he's numbed us to triple doubles. Context is important, but he's averaging a triple double like all the time. Like, how many years has it been now? And we're just, you know, it's just an afterthought. That's still impressive. I just don't know, with the supporting cast around him and the way that his offensive shot profile sort of, there's that tug of war between efficient nights and then longer stretches of inefficiency. There's just something feels off about the Wizards there.
Yeah, I like that point a lot. And you talk about Westbrook being this inefficient player. Once you stretch that sample size past a few games, it's crazy, because sometimes you think that Westbrook is going to be this new player. It's like he turned over a new leaf. He's not taking as many threes. He's picking his spots better. His jump shot is going down. The mid-range is back, like we saw him in the OKC tenure. And then he kind of reverts back to the guy we've seen before. It's like the raw numbers are great. It looks fantastic. It's like if you are you have a turkey or you have a chicken or something like that, and you have the exterior, it looks amazing. You know, it comes out of the oven. It's like, wow, this is going to be a feast. And then once you start to kind of dive into it and get a little bit deeper, then you see the flaws. It's like, well, this part isn't done right. And this part is a little bit more like raw than this. It's not quite as chewy as this. So it's like, then you start to find the flaws. So we can pick and prod at him all day if you want to nitpick on what he's doing. But in any case, Hall of Fame player having a Hall of Fame stretch, triple doubles everywhere. And, you know, it really is incredible because, as you said, the supporting cast is iffy. And if the Wizards with their young players, it's like they don't quite really work out. Like I think of Beal and Wall, of course, worked out. Otto Porter, while he was there, turned out to be a good player. But other than that, you kind of start to look at and grasp at other players that have really developed. Hachimura is kind of there, kind of not. It just depends on how you look at him and what night he's playing. Avdija, you know, the jury's still kind of out on him. It's unfortunate that he went down last night with an injury. Thomas Bryant looks like a good player, although he also went down with an injury, who we actually don't really talk about that much anymore. We kind of forget about him. But I do want to give a shout-out to Davis Bertans, who they got in free agency. His last six games, he's averaging about 15.7 points on 48% from three. So his production that they were typically used to seeing from him after signing that deal is returning. And I think that gives them a really a much better chance of winning some more games as well. But then you look at their competition, and it's like if the Bulls get LaVine back in time, they might be in the mix there as well. The Raptors are the Raptors. They really, I feel like in most years, they wouldn't be this low. I think there's some of that has to do with where they're playing at and the circumstances of the season. So all it takes from them is a good five-game stretch, and they're in. And they're very capable of that because of the veterans. They've been here before. They've been together for a while. Nick Nurse is a great coach, so I wouldn't put it past them either. But since the Wizards seem to be on the best roll right now, and they have probably the best talent as it pertains to the top end, that might give them the best chance. So they are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They've won six in a row. So kudos to them. But like you said, it's hard to trust them. And this whole season's been like this. It's been a roller coaster. So we might be in for a dip. This would be a bad time for it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go on some kind of losing streak, especially if they have some tougher competition coming up in the next few games.
Yeah, they were hit by, you know, COVID earlier in the season, and Davis Bertans, like, he was just one of the guys recovering from it before he suffered his calf strain. So they haven't had the easiest go of it in the season. I think what bodes well for them is that they clearly want the play-in spot, where I still think it's up in the air whether Toronto wants to be there when you just look at the availability on a night-to-night basis. They're just clearly the better team. They haven't had their best players available for long stretches. And the Wizards are sort of in that same boat. When you look at the lineup data for each team, it's really not even in close. But the supporting cast for Washington is, you know, Russ still carries an immense load. And so you can probably dismiss some of the efficiency problems just based off the that square one workload that he's going to carry on a night-to-night basis. You look at their supporting cast, and you mentioned their the past 10 games where they're 8-2. Like the fifth most played player during that stretch has been Raul Neto. And like, that's great. He's solid. And like, he's plucky on defense, but like that, to have that be your fifth most played guy during your hottest stretch of the season is somewhat of a red flag. And you didn't have Davis Bertans for, I don't think this entire stretch, or no, he's been here for the past 10 games. I can't remember when he came back from that calf strain. So I don't know if he's been available, but like dealing with that stuff and then not really having the depth to make it up. You mentioned Thomas Bryant being out. That's definitely been a blow to their offensive versatility. He's not the best defender, but as a center who can really space the floor, that's an element that they sort of lost in him. This team is just, I keep coming back to, you mentioned the top end talent. I think that's probably the most important part. And then they are going for that play-in spot, where with Toronto, you're sort of on the fence as to how much they want it. They're also not that far in front of the Bulls, who clearly want it. So if Zach LaVine's in the lineup, he gets some chemistry with like Vucevic, that's a team that we'd have to consider. The East play-in race is a mess. I think we have probably the top nine spots ironed out, even though the Pacers have been sort of a billboard for inconsistency this year, and they've had a ton of injury problems, including ongoing right now. But I think the top nine are sort of set, and this three-team melee with Washington, Toronto, and Chicago is very tough to sort of digest and really rationalize at the moment.
It is difficult, Dan. That's a great point for sure. And you said that how much this conference is a mess. I mean, all you have to do is just look at the records relative to the Western Conference. You see the teams at the bottom of the plan right now, and you get 25-33, 25-34, 24-34. And then you go to the West, and it's like, you know, the Pelicans, who we're about to talk about here, they are only 8 games under .500. So they have a better record than these teams, and they're a good ways out of the 10th seed in their conference. So it goes back to the whole argument against like East and West and the plan or no plan. And I think this is where teams like Dallas get upset, because they say to themselves, wow, we're 31-26. We are 5 games over .500. And we still are going to probably, I won't say probably, they might have to fight for their life in the play-in tournament. So, and then you go to the other conference and it's like, well, how are the Raptors still in this? You know, they had an absolutely terrible stretch in March and they're still in the thick of it. So it creates some, you can say it's like, well, this isn't fair, but I think it was Howard Beck had this article not too long ago. I think it was like Sports Illustrated. And he was talking about how like this season, it just isn't going to be fair for everybody. That's just the nature of what we're dealing with. And I totally agree with him. There's going to be inconsistencies, but that's what happens when you try to make the most of a unfortunate situation. So it's just kind of how the nature is right now. And I think it just really, it goes for a lot of teams in the NBA right now, pretty much all of the teams, but it's like, who's going to end up being the healthiest at the right time. So for the Wizards, this might end up being that for them. So if they can just end this stretch with Westbrook and Beal healthy, you know, have Bertans producing, they might have a shot. They might really have a shot. And then, you know, puncher's chance after that, who knows, in the actual plan. But we're going to have to just wait and see, because this team, there's no telling what you're going to get from them from night to night.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's a great point on just the, it might just come down to which team has the more available bodies at this point. And I don't think the play-in tournament is necessarily the problem this season. It's the rest of the schedule with how truncated it was, that if you're worried about injuries, I know Mark Cuban and Luka Doncic weren't happy about the play-in. And there is the element of, okay, if Dallas finishes seventh and they are, you know, how many games are they? They're only 3 games in front of 10th right now. So that doesn't really feel like a problem to me. But if they were 5 or 6, like, I get it. You go through this season and you could technically lose your playoff spot. But the argument they were making was more so just like, oh, when we're so worried about injuries, well, then maybe you shouldn't have had this truncated 72-game schedule. And that's not that Luka Doncic decided to have this, but this whole thing was collectively bargained and like it was voted upon. And so was the play-in tournament. So, and Cuban was one of the ones who voted for the play-in. Exactly. I think that was unanimous, actually. So that is just, my sympathy is limited there. I get the workload these players are shouldering, and I'm looking more at the macro view of like, wow, this schedule was really backloaded. It felt like too, where you're talking about stretches. I can't remember which team had like 17 games and 29 nights to close out the year. Yeah. That's a lot. And so that's the bigger symptom, not so much the play-in tournament.
Yeah, for sure. It's just unfortunate, but yeah, it's just whatever team can weather the storm the best. And, you know, while we're on the topic of inequality, I mean, that brings us to the Western Conference and how the Pelicans are trying to deal with their season. So this is one team and one player we're going to focus on to kind of wrap up this discussion today. But for Zion and the Pelicans, I mean, they're looking at a situation where the play-in is starting to become a little bit more out of reach. The race isn't over. You know, we still have, you know, somewhere between 13 to 15 games left, depending on which team you're looking at. But, you know, for the Pelicans to be 3.5 games behind the Spurs for that last spot, and they lost 4 in a row, some winnable games in that stretch, it's definitely a tough blow for them. But with all that being said, Zion himself has been a revelation for this team, and he was already good as a rookie. We saw how incredible he can be once he starts to learn the game and leverage his athletic gifts. Now that's starting to come into play. So basically what the Pelicans did this season is they gave him more control over the offense. Brandon Ingram missed some games, which gave Zion more of an opportunity to do this, but he's handling more pick and rolls. You know, he's being more of a ball handler, initiating actions, and that's resulting in more opportunities. So for him, I mean, it's crazy to think about this, Dan. He's only at 77 career games as of today. He hasn't played a full 82 games yet as of April 22nd today. So his averages are already 26, almost 27 points a game, 7 boards and 3 assists. So he's 6th in the league in scoring at age 20. No three-pointer. So he's not generating a bunch of points off of three-pointers. His free throw percentage is only at 70%, which is an improvement. But where he does his damage is the paint. So he's going to get 8.6 free throws per game, and he's going to be 63% from two, which is insane for a guy that's not a traditional big man that doesn't camp in there. So we're looking at Zion's production. It's really just a superstar in the making when you look at his raw production and how unstoppable he is at the rim. If there's any kind of jumper to be had there, the free throw percentage can inch up a little bit higher. We're looking at a guy that's, you know, pretty much unstoppable. You could actually make the case in that category already for him. So whether or not they make the plan, it's definitely a successful season when it comes to the development of Zion. And it gives us something to look forward to for this team as they continue to mature together and grow, because technically this is really the second season with this revamped core. So if they don't make it, I wouldn't be so necessarily quick to deem this a failure. How do you feel about this season if they do end up outside of the play-in? Can they still take some nuggets of hope and confidence from this season, even though they're going to come up short again, possibly depending on how they finish?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, unlocking Zion as your point big, whatever you want to call him, point thingamabob, whatever it is – I think that's huge for them, and he's been a monster since they started doing it. And there was always a hint of that he could do this, because he was never, even though he finishes so much inside, like it wasn't strictly him just putting down putbacks or getting out in transition. Like there's a craft to his game. Like he can use angles when he's trying to maneuver around defenders. It's not just the force of his body. There is guile there. And so to put the ball in his hands more was a no-brainer decision, maybe forced upon them a little bit by injuries, but that's probably the best discovery that could have happened to them under those circumstances. So it's still troubling that when you look at this season, they've lost the minutes that Zion has been on the floor after he's done all this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's not necessarily on him. The team, the makeup around him was always questionable. I was not a big fan of the Steven Adams addition. He's a good player. Mm-hmm. Like the offensive numbers with him and Zion have been fine, but at the same time, you're just taking some space away from Zion in those situations. Mm-hmm. They seem to have found something with, and I don't know, I haven't seen their past few games, so I don't know how heavily they're going to this now, but like they had seemed to find something with these Zion plus bench units that were just absolutely annihilating opponents. And so that he can do that, where he can really carry units as where Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball are both off the floor. And you're not, you know, you're not banking on Lonzo Ball shooting and scoring. You're not banking on Brandon Ingram's creation. That's monstrous for them too. They're just seeing that he has these different dimensions, different type of depth to his game than they knew before. And that should make it easier, because they did their entire offseason last year, while it was still felt like a little bit of just they fell on their face with the Steven Adams stuff, or at least that they should have. I didn't understand the extension part. If you were going to give up value for him in the trade, I didn't understand the extension part. That's what I keep coming back to.
Same.
But you also didn't know you had this version of Zion. And now that you know that you have this version of Zion and that this is what he can do, you can flesh out the roster accordingly. And so that's what I would look for them to do over the offseason. They need to figure out some things on the wings. You know, Najee Marshall is a great find, but he's also been like one of their – I don't know if you want him as one of your most used players over the past few weeks. And so they do have a chance if they're not as focused on the play-in tournament, because they are – you know, this is only the second season of their – best player, their franchise cornerstone, and Brandon Ingram isn't that old. Lonzo Ball's not old either. You can go through that self-exploration where if they wanted to try some different things, and they'll be forced into trying some different things when you look at just, you know, Josh Hart being injured right now, and even Nikhil Alexander-Walker dealing with some ankle stuff. At the same time, there has to be a sense of urgency to this team, because they already paid Ingram. Lonzo Ball is going to get paid this summer, and you have to pay him after not trading him, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You've already paid Steven Adams, but that's like, I don't know how important you view that. The thing I keep coming back to is there an element of, well, how long will Zion's prime last? Because he's so unprecedented when you look at his athleticism coupled with like his nimble footedness and then really just his craft and IQ. It looks like he's going to be smart enough to extend his prime if his athleticism starts to wane, but just because he's such a – he's an incomparable player. I've never seen anyone like him play before, that there has to be the sense of urgency. Well, we need to make the most of this while he's good now. And no, you shouldn't short-circuit your future or mortgage too much of it. But Zion is good enough to win right now, and you have to figure out how to win as soon as possible while he's this good.
You know, Dan, winning is definitely a priority for this team, even though their experiment is early in the process. But it's hard to do when you can't really get any kind of consistency going on defense, which is – it's weird to look at this because you bring in a guy like Stan Van Gundy. Everybody was saying he's going to change the defensive philosophy of this team. You know, we were expecting – maybe some people were expecting – a renaissance, a revival like New York has seen with Tom Thibodeau taking the reins. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. And I think it's more of the personnel that are in place more than the coaching. Because when you look at guys like Zion and you look at Brandon, it's like they're so offensively minded. I think that's so far ahead of their defense right now. They don't really tend to take care of that defensive department. It's not really an area of importance for them. So what you're left with is a ninth finish in offensive rating this season and 27th in defensive rating. It's crazy because they were a better defensive team last year at 19th instead of 27th. So we're looking at an influence going the other direction. Offense only, defense is an afterthought. And I think that's one of the qualities of a team that's young still. When you talk about Alexander Walker and Hart and all of these guys, they're in their early to mid-20s. Defense is not something that's going to come naturally to most players. It's going to take a little bit more just repetition. It's going to take more coaching. It's going to take more time and experience. So I think this is a team that's operating more off of their talent level than anything right now, instead of like attention to detail and the finer points of the game. I'm sure that'll come in time. But for now, they're just left with a bunch of holes on defense. And then that's why they're so vulnerable a lot of times in these games, especially late, even though they have all the talent and they have all the ability. So at this point, they're 3.5 games back of 10. They have the 10th hardest schedule in the league, and only 5 games are at home. And once you add in the fact that they're a little bit beat up right now, it doesn't look good for their chances. So that's why I bring up the question about how should we view this season if they don't make it? And I think it's disappointing, but I don't think we should completely write them off because they have found some things like Zion and continued excellence from Brandon, because some people probably thought that maybe last season was a flash in the pan, but now we've seen that it's sustainable. So that's another good sign for the Pelicans as they move forward, regardless of how this season turns out for them.
Yeah, that's not really being covered, I feel like, of how good Brandon Ingram has been. And the fit with Zion feels a little bit more seamless, where Brandon Ingram has done even a better job at being a complement, not just someone who can generate his own offense. So that is huge for them, because you do have, I think, what could be two of your best players on a really good team. And I would agree with you that it's definitely not the end of the world if they don't make the play-in, and it certainly doesn't look like they're going to this season. I do think, though, that what happens this year does have to do a better job of informing how they're building out the rest of the roster. Mm-hmm. I'd be hesitant to declare like that their defense is hopeless with the current personnel. Maybe let's see them go through a non-abbreviated training camp, or just have more time under Stan Van Gundy. His teams have typically overachieved on the defensive side. That being said, you need more options on the wing, and I think you need more versatility in your front court, aside from Zion, that is, to really make the most of that. If you're a team that ranks in the bottom 4 of both opponent field goal percentage at the rim and from beyond the arc, like, you're just not
great.
You're not going to stop a lot of people. And there could be an element of luck involved if you want to look at the rim percentage, but like the 3-point stuff is actually bad. It doesn't seem as much of opponents are getting lucky, where even Zion is culpable to this to some extent, where it feels like if you watch the Pelicans, it feels like they're giving up just so many more corner threes because of where he's standing on defensive points. He's still young. Like you said, he hasn't even played in 82 games yet. I'm not ready to say that Brandon Ingram is not going to be able to improve defensively. I thought he would be more disruptive coming to New Orleans than he has been the past 2 seasons. And I thought he did a better job of that while he was with the Lakers. So there's still some potential there. If you bring back Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball is a good team defender, even if you can't throw him one-on-one against anyone. I think Eric Bledsoe, he's perked up a little bit, but he's definitely a better defender than he showed this year. So there is talent, but you do have to let this season and the awkward fits where you're seeing them, you have to let it do a better job of informing how you're finishing off this roster moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. It really, they're gonna have to just kind of take a deep dive on the roster. I think that your front end is good, but as you kind of touched on, the depth is a little bit lacking, the versatility is lacking. So there's holes to plug. It's not like they're starting at the bottom. This isn't Detroit. This isn't OKC. It's not like they have to just find every little piece, but there are supplemental pieces missing that are just gonna allow Zion and Ingram, guys like that, to be at their best. So there's definitely they know, I think this team knows what they need to improve upon. And I'm sure in that front office and in that organization, they feel confident that in a typical season where they have that practice time you mentioned, having a training camp, having summer league, that's something we actually need to recognize as well. Summer league is a huge developmental time for these players. If you don't have that, you're definitely at a disadvantage. But if they can clean that up, more time under this coach, yeah, I think they're going to be okay. I wouldn't panic if I'm a Pelicans fan, if I'm in this organization. The only one worry, and this is the one I had with Zion coming into his career, is the one you touched on. And I guess we could end with this. His availability, his health, I'm not sure. I mean, his rookie season, it had injuries. I'm really thankful. I'm glad that this season hasn't had that. He's been pretty much healthy this season. But going forward, I'm just kind of scared, honestly. He has so much force coming down after these dunks and everything. I mean, one land wrong landing could really kind of set him back. So I think that's the only thing on this team, aside from, of course, just operating smart when it comes to building the roster, that could really short circuit this thing long term. It all comes down to Zion and his availability. So if that's there, the sky's the limit for New Orleans. And they should really just kind of look at this season as a bridge towards a future that looks very bright from multiple perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point to looking at all the draft equity that they have after trading Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis. It's on the one hand, you want to have, guys like Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Kyrie Lewis. You want to give them the rope necessary to learn, and that's going to entail some rough patches next year. They're like, Kyrie Lewis hasn't played a ton of minutes this season. He's not just going to come in and be this impact player after logging probably under 750 minutes for his rookie season, or maybe he'll get above that by the end of the year. But you also, if you're measuring that against, well, look at how good Zion is now. We've paid Ingram. Look at how good he is now. Do you try and turn some of that equity into players that can help you win immediately? And it'll be interesting to see what they decide there. It's not a Stephen Curry situation just because Zion and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball are so much younger, where you have to give up these assets to do something. At the same time, the West is brutal, and you're not just going to stumble into like a 3 or 4 seed by doing nothing next year. That's something I don't have a feel for what they will do. I don't have a feel for what they should do, to be honest with you, with those draft picks. But coming after this season, knowing that Zion might make all NBA and at least be in that conversation already, you have to be looking at those picks, and you're going to be looking at the trade market. There's always a next big name or semi-big name that'll be available. It doesn't have to be Bradley Beal on his way to free agency. It could be somebody else. I don't have anyone off the top of my head. But if there's that next star trade demand or disgruntled star, do you go and make a play for him because of how good Zion is and because of those concerns you brought up? I'm not going to call Zion injury prone and the whole worry about his body type. Like, he's not out of shape, but people his size, like, they're not supposed to move like he does. And I'm not
Not at all.
vertically, just laterally too. It's just
Doesn't
his
make sense.
body mechanics don't make sense because they're so great and just unprecedented. And it's weird that that's a concern, but I do think it has to be part of the calculus of how you're building this team.
Sure. I think at one point or another, the urgency factor is going to drive them to make do on these picks that they have, the draft equity, the cap space, things like that. They're going to have to start cashing that in and making something happen. Because you just never know. There's no telling how long windows last. And as you stated with the Western Conference, teams are always improving. They're always making moves. So in order to keep up with that, you have to act accordingly and just kind of make do on the assets you're given. You have access to. But I think that brings us to the end of our conversation here, Dan, today. I want to thank you again for joining me. This is a great time. I have the feeling we can go forever when it comes to these players and these franchises. There's a lot to talk about. And your good conversation. But we'll leave it there for now and wish you the best with everything at Bleacher Report and your other projects that you're a part of. Before you go, why don't you let the listeners or watchers know where they can find you on social media if they want to get in touch with you or maybe check out some of your content you have.
Yeah, I'm always tweeting nonsense and promoting my work on Twitter, so that's the best place to get at me. That's at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. And thank you so much for having me, Aaron.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anytime. So for Business Casual Basketball, if you want to catch us on social media, that's going to be BC Basketball 2, Twitter and Instagram. And then bcbasketball.info is our website if you want to get caught up with some of our resources that we have to offer for you guys if you're looking for free agent lists, blog posts, and things of that nature. So until next time, guys, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day here. Enjoy this great NBA season as the playoffs are fast approaching. And we'll be back here next week with some more NBA analysis with another great special guest and more storylines to cover. So until then, guys, we'll see you and have a good one. Take care.